This is Leo Babiew for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio, and we've got Wandering Nature News for early February. We're here with Gooseberry Falls State Park naturalist Michaela Rice. How do, Michaela? How are you?
Howdy.
Welcome to February already.
Yes. There's hearts in here and Christmas stuff still. But I'm feeling the love.
Referring to the environment in our cozy studio here at KTWH. You know, it's February, Michaela. The days are getting longer. You know, that sunset is definitely noticeably later. It's the warmest winter in my Minnesota memory, and so many phenology topics we could cover. Anything that comes to mind, jumps out for you that you want to make sure we cover today?
Locally at home. Well, okay. At home meaning, let's just say in my apartment or my parents' home, I am noticing some of these birds like chickadees and maybe cardinals making different noises. So I'm like, ooh, it is kind of springy out, right? I know that along the highway as I drive to Gooseberry Falls from Duluth, I see a lot of ducks on the open water. I see still a lot of bald eagles. I talked to a bald eagle expert over the weekend. Jamie is the lead vet tech at the Raptor Center and works, you know, with bald eagles very intensely, taught me a few things. And I said, you know, why am I seeing all these eagles all of a sudden on the highway? And he said that it's just a really common area for bald eagles to congregate. The open water is really important for them in the winter. Even large scale bald eagles and golden eagles will move to this area around the Great Lakes in the wintertime for all the open water. So it's highly valuable. And after the cold snap, the inner water froze over. So a lot of them finally got the bump to move. That's why I didn't see it until January. Sometimes it happens in November or December. And so I'm just still seeing a lot of adults. It's just beautiful. Haven't heard any owls. I don't see owls very often at all, but it is the mating season for the great horned owl. So if you live in their area, listen probably about 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night.
Okay.
They're going to be flirting outside.
And you're talking about a big owl in the great horn, but some of my experience in some of our state parks up the North Shore has been encountering saw-whet owls. Mm. Have you had the pleasure of hearing that really unusual sound they make?
Not in the wild. No, okay. I have not. I've seen screech owls, but not on the North Shore. So that's cool that you've seen them. They're very small owls.
Yes, like indeed they are. We had an encounter that was pretty fascinating. It was well up the shore at Cascade. And this is years back. And I know, anecdotal evidence. Maybe this is a rare event.
No, silly me. I'm thinking you're describing a saw-whet.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of a screech owl. I have seen saw-whets on the North Shore because I've handled them. But okay. We were calling them with an audio box, so I have not heard them make that noise to each other. We were calling them in, like, with a Bluetooth speaker.
Right. You're calling them in with a Bluetooth speaker with a person making a call or an actual recording?
An actual recording. Oh, okay. This was how we mist-netted those little tiny, I'm looking at a jar on Leo's desk. These owls could fit inside of them.
Sure.
Well inside of them.
It's a mason jar, let's say. Yeah.
So they live in tiny little tree cavities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We found them just fascinating because everybody thinks owls are big and
powerful.
Imposing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. These little feet could barely probably reach around this pen. Fully furred little mittens, but sharp, sharp talons. Beautiful little feet.
So still hunters, just smaller prey.
Just tiny. Yeah, just little tiny mousers.
You know, that brings up the question of winter behavior for everything that's been denned up. And we talk about official hibernation versus animals that den up for protection but are not knocked out all winter. And I guess the question I have is this February and January and December extended periods of warmth just kind of disrupting the equilibrium of those winter deep sleepers, the ones whose metabolism changes?
All the critters in some form, let's say even us, right? Our metabolism is meant to change in winter, like in terms of how much we eat and we want to go dormant, right?
Some of us.
We're driven though, like biologically to do that. So yeah, it's all kind of a spectrum, but some of those critters I think are probably waking up more often. And And we need to, I guess, see if how much they were waking up was at a cost to them, right? Because you were kind of running through some questions before, and it's really still all about energetics. Most animals go dormant in the winter, not necessarily because it's cold, but they just don't have enough food.
Yeah.
To keep them warm or awake. So I think the food shortages over the winter is going to be the biggest telling, not so much the weather. But I haven't heard that like something in a very deeper state of torpor, like a bear. I haven't heard of them waking up in the last few months. So,
right.
So luckily they're underground. The skunks I've smelt on and off the past month, but they usually just wake up maybe for like 12 hours or something, like smaller windows. They're still eating less. They're still awake less. But yeah, I guess we'll just have to kind of see how that affects them in the long term.
Yeah, and it definitely is that, to put it technically, bioenergetics, the reality of what food might even be on the landscape if their metabolism got them up and trying to move around. I mean, any animal that's up and around is going to be seeking food, and if there isn't much of what they subsist on most of the year, what are they going to do except try to get back to sleep? But now the warmth has woken them up.
Yeah, I think migrators are actually influenced more because many of them may have chosen to stay back with the warmer weather, but the resources may not also support that choice always. So I've been kind of hearing more questions. People, I think, are starting to pay attention, like, oh, well, why are these animals migrating, or why didn't they this year, or why are they here right now? People are starting to notice these phenological cues are changing. Maybe they didn't know, oh, this actually happens every year, but once it changes, people are like, oh, it's different this year.
You have any particular examples of some critters that have stayed longer?
I think robins was on people's mind.
Wow.
Some of the geese, the ducks, the birds, even the deer didn't really group up this year. So people are not seeing this local migration that we normally do. I was noticing the bald eagle changes. So those are all kind of migratory examples.
I know you mentioned that you had an interesting wolf behavior note for us this month.
Yeah, it's just a little blurb Voyagers put out about the trend that they're seeing when they do find a wolf kill on a deer, which, mind you, is like 3% success rate or something, very, very low, that the whole carcass is consumed within like 24 to 48 hours, where typically they would actually leave, you know, some stuff, some remnants, some cartilage, maybe the ribs, the other bones, actually give the other animals a reason to come, but they're just devouring the whole thing. So it's evidence that they
need every calorie.
They need everything. They're eating all the bone marrow. They're spending the time to literally just chop up these bones that they normally maybe would come back for. The wolf kill sites are very large because they're spreading, you know, each wolf is spreading out. So yeah, it's just evidence that wolves are hungry right now. So that could maybe play into, if it's a long spring, they're having a hard time catching food. Are they going to come? Are they going to change their behavior in the spring? I don't know. They sure could be hungry.
I don't know if you've read any of the work by some of the folks up at Voyagers and elsewhere who have seen, it's a fair amount of taking of beavers that gets them through the spring.
Oh, beavers.
Yeah.
There's actually a video clip that they just released as well on their social media of a wolf diving in the water. It doesn't fully go under, in a few feet of water, and it catches a beaver in the water. Small beaver, but it's it's amazing. Yeah.
The, like, the vulnerable ones from the family,
like,
unit.
Oh yeah, I suppose. It looked like a big black glab. It wasn't a black, you know, but like, it was like, you know, just seeing, okay, this is the wolf in its habitat.
Right. Well, it's amazing what we continue to discover about species that we think we have some kind of clear vision of their life cycle.
Absolutely.
And we're just beginning to really understand, I think.
Nature humbles us all the time.
And we're certainly being humbled by the weather, Michaela. I don't want to dwell on the fact that it's the wackiest weather I've experienced in the winter since moving to Minnesota over 40 years ago, but what's the greatest concern or question that you have when you're looking at this, what's happening in our particular winter or spring? Is it more to you about the kind of weather patterns that climate change is going to bring for ecosystems, not just here, but everywhere? I mean, what are your questions or what are more your concerns? What would you share at least?
Well, what's been on my mind recently, as you do remind us often, which is not bad, because I also think about it a lot, right? How this stuff all ties together, what's going on, what's the long-term effects, is I'm just thinking, okay, what do I think long-term patterns are going to look like? And of course, I'm kind of thinking wildlife or like plant species, grassland species and stuff. And so I'm kind of thinking that these generalists are doing really well. They're spreading back to either more, like increasing their range or coming back to their range. For example, the fisher, the bobcat, the turkey, the coyote, the wolf. Another generalist would be like the possum, right? Invasive species are kind of generalists, right? Because they can do a lot. They take over. They can breed a lot.
Well, so, successful invasive species,
yeah,
which are
yeah.
the ones we see.
That we worry about,
the ones
right?
Successful,
yeah. So we're going to probably see a lower diversity overall because these generalists are going to do well and they're going to spread. Like some of these animals can increase their range like 30 to 100 miles a year or something, you know? So like that's something you can see over a few years. So that's just kind of what I've been thinking about lately. But ask me next week and I'll have a completely different answer for you.
We'll have to talk more about generalists, and it is so intricate because who can be on the landscape is not a matter of what is there now, but what, say, the entire landscape's plant communities are evolving to, because it may not be the same place that they're trying to make a living in today in 30 years.
I don't think so. I think
savannas
literally...
and boreal forests, they're not exactly the same niche for an animal to figure out.
We're going through literal ground up changes, soil chemistry changes from erosion and like leaching and different land use types. So the understory is changing with worms and more white-tailed deer. So everything is changing. So
we're writing a book and we're reading it while we do it. Why don't we pivot, as they say these days, to things that are all about your work as an outreach educator?
Sure.
Events that you're, what's next? I know you've had community art and you've had sessions with the young people about nature, and what's next?
So we probably won't have time, but I did bring you a really fun box of weasel bio artifacts that I brought to the nursing home today. So we talked about all the weasel family, mustelid family, so all the way to the little ermines, all the way up to the river otter, which is the biggest pelt I have, badger. So doing a lot of fun stuff in the community. We're prepping for the candlelight event that is February 17th, Saturday, from 6 to 8 p.m. Still come. I know.
Need I
no
add rain
snow.
Or shine or fog?
You know, it's like we're going to have to be creative in setting up. We might need more volunteers if that's something you're willing to help us out with, folks on the radio. This is different for us. And
phone number or email if somebody wants to volunteer?
Yeah, you can
email
me. I'm going to spell it michaela.rice@state.mn.us, and I'll get you set up.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Yeah, because for this event to come about, you need all hands on deck. And I think helping to clean up after a very long day, I remember you saying that might be really a great help as well to the staff at the park. You still have to try to make luminaries, or that's not possible with non-freezing conditions?
I think they've mostly melted, yeah. So that's where the creativity is going to take place, and if we can even do candles. But like folks can literally now drive down to Lady Slipper, you know, if you have a park permit, the picnic lot. So my party is more accessible, if that means anything.
Okay. Well, that's important to someone like you.
My activities.
You in particular.
So I just want to meet people that are up visiting. But yeah, I mean, it's beautiful hiking weather. Like there's still birds out and activities, snow, rain, or shine. Probably not pouring rain, but mud's going to be another thing. Goodness, wear your mud boots.
Yeah, right. Have the right gear for the type of day it is. And as of now, I know it looked like we might get back to highs in the upper 20s early next week. I haven't looked at anything. It goes out 2 weeks, Michaela, so I just wish you good luck, however it rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And any other sessions coming up at our public library that you wanted to point out?
Well, my next youth library program is March 15th at 11 o'clock, and this one is about if animals use a calendar, how do you think animals tell time and know what season it is when it's time to, you know, make babies or get ready to go dormant for the winter, things like that.
So you'll be talking about the daily planner that they use for, that's for an analog guy. I don't know what the digital animals use at all. Their smartphones are not part of the picture.
Yeah, we don't have techie critters, but yeah. I'll tell you how the old school ones do it. at the library, we do a little activity. We try to do a craft.
Yeah.
It's aimed, like, literally there's some infant kiddos that come, and then I got up to like 13, and I try my best to give them all something to take away. And shout out to the moms and the grandmas that come. And we got dads that bring their kids to my craft program. Shout out to you.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting there with your kid and it's awesome. And it's so fun to watch something be made. So I'm really enjoying it.
Fantastic. And you can't see it on the radio. It definitely brings a smile to Michaela's face. We thank you so much for sharing that, Michaela. Unless you have anything else, I guess I'm going to say good luck with all of those upcoming public events. And we'll see you in the park, I hope, a lot of us, on the big February 17th day of the candlelit event, and on the radio next time on Wandering Nature News.
Thanks for having me, Leo. See you next time.
Take care. This is Leo for KTWH.